outside of the grand final, there's only one other game on the fixture that comes with as much anticipation, if not more. There's the build-up.
This is what football's all about. You've got to rise in the adversity. You've got to stand up when the time comes.
Our nation's defining heritage.
We will remember them.
The respects we pay.
Would you please stand and remove your hats for the Anzac observance?
The two teams whose history and roots run deep in our town.
3.5 minutes to play, the Bombers down. And skip clear by 12 points.
That haunting silence. And then, the most anticipated of all moments, that release of emotion. Be there with the number one call team on radio.
Now we've got game on!
Thanks to McDonald's. Triple M rocks Anzac Day football.
Yes, we do. The MCG has never looked better than it does at the moment. Monday, Anzac Day, Essendon, Collingwood. It gets no better than this. There'll be 90,000 plus in this amazing place. And it's a different style Anzac Day game. 15th plays 16th, so neither of these teams are flying, but it hasn't mattered in the past. They get out here for 2 hours and punch on, and it is absolutely sensational. We got a couple of hours before that game even begins. There's all the magnificent ceremony we'll bring to you. And all of the interviews as well. Some great people we're going to chat to prior to the bounce, including Ross Lyon, including Jack Revolt, Kevin Sheedy, Jamie Elliott. There's lots for us to look forward to. Brian Taylor's here as his spud, as his domo. Hello, Bristol.
Yes, the interesting results continue to come our way, don't they? Melbourne superb again yesterday for the first time in quite a number of years, winning consecutive games, which is absolutely outstanding for them. The Blues getting up over at Domain Stadium. Bit of a shock result there, I would have thought.
It's almost got lost, hasn't it, in what else is going on.
Paying pre-bounce, Carlton.
$6.
I was going to say, it had to be at least $6.
Oh, was it? I thought it was $3, but anyway, you could be right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking the bottom team and Freo had to win, but that's an unbelievable result. So we're going to have a look at that. Spud, we're going to have a look at Melbourne. There's plenty for us to get our heads around, and also this incredible day.
Well, what a great day. What a great day it is on the Australian calendar, and football's the forefront. But let's not forget why Anzac Day is around. And you could not get a better day for the Australian people, the RBT. I think the AFL have done well commemorating this great day, but let's not forget guys who are younger than guys running out today, ages 17, 18. Guys are actually underage to go over and fight for their country. So
I was at a function, Anzac function, on Friday, Spud, and it was over at the Glasshouse there, and one of the greatest speeches I've ever heard anyone give was from a guy by the name of Peter Fitzsimons, former rugby player and author, well-known author, you know, Nancy Wake and Gallipoli and Tobruk and all of those books. And he gave this speech and educated the 600 people that were there in the 40 minutes he spoke, the most unbelievable education on war and what it all meant and how it ties into sport. It was just absolutely amazing. The room was spellbound for the entire 40 minutes. I think Eddie Maguire said to me when I sat down next to him that that is one of the greatest speeches I've ever heard outlining what the whole thing is all about. It was incredible.
And also, Paul Ruse, I really liked on the footy show Thursday night, Damo, talking about we tend to go back to Gallipoli and the two world wars, and very understandably because of the human toll and the stories around it, but it's ongoing. We've got people overseas as we speak, and losing lives you know, as we speak. And so I really liked the Melbourne and Richmond story last night, where they are looking as much forward as behind to add to this story Brian's talking about.
Yeah, and not just, as we know, World War One. It's Vietnam, which is still very much part of all our lives in some form. And you're right, Jim. I think footy's got it really right. The balance, I think, for periods of the 20 or so years we've been playing Anzac Day matches, I think there's been touches of times where it might have gone too far in the comparisons between what goes on out there between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock today with what actually happened as a real facet of life. But I reckon we've got it right now, and we've pulled back, and it's all in context, and it's done very, very well.
That's exactly right, Damo. And the thing for me is that this day, what it's done, what the sport connection, the football connection to our past history at war, is it's educated our kids.
Yeah.
For instance, I've been asked for tickets today. I never get asked for tickets.
Same here.
Every one of my children is coming today. Not because they necessarily barrack for the teams that are playing, but this is how they've been educated on what it's all about. And I reckon there would be hundreds of families out there that would not have otherwise been educated to the point they have if this game wasn't happening.
No, my two young blokes are here today too and can't wait for it, and they don't support either club. Hey, let's jump over to Perth. Frio have become a big story. Of course, top of the table, home and away, prelim finalists last year, and find themselves 0-5, which is incredible for anyone who follows our game. And it must be mystifying to this man, Ross Lyon, who's been good enough to jump on the phone and chat to us, the senior coach at the Frio Footy Club. Ross, welcome to you.
Thanks, James.
I don't reckon you would have woken up today expecting to be in this position.
It certainly wasn't the plan. We're all disappointed, but it's reality and we need to deal with it. We need to facilitate it. And we're always having two looks as a club, the next game and always looking longer. So it puts some urgency onto the longer scenario. There's no doubt about that.
I really liked your press conference following the North Melbourne game. I watched it and I really liked how you said you guys are going to report crisis and all the rest of it. And you said, I understand why you'll do that, but for us inside the tent here, we've just got to improve and get better. So on the back of what you said, and I thought it was terrific, a week later, you clearly haven't improved because the bottom team beat you at home.
No, correct. We thought in the North Melbourne game, we played some really good football, and our ball use and speed of ball movement and scoring was quite strong, and defensively we let ourselves down. So again, we thought we had a good week on the track. We went in, but our effort was really strong. I thought our intensity, maybe a bit reckless at times, but we started well. We had a lot of possession, a lot of contested ball. But our method, and it's been our weakness all year, our transitioning the ball out of our back half to get it across centre was abysmal again. And we paid a heavy price again. So it's been the same thing all year. We've tried to improve it, but well, the facts are we've gone backwards, so that's frustrating. And whether it was young or old out there, and it wouldn't matter who we're playing, we have an inability to win AFL games because of that. So we know what we're trying to fix, we just haven't been able to do it.
So, Ross, you said there before you're starting to look a little longer as well, and we know that clubs always look forward and always look to the long term, but is that a little more immediate now in both style and personnel that you will start to do that?
Well, I don't think style. I think we acknowledge that we've tried to improve and shift, and we brought in people and given people responsibilities, and we're still working with them. So we're not going to give up on it, but clearly the implementation hasn't gone according to plan. So that's the first thing. So secondly, is it more immediate? Well, there's no doubt, I'm sure you'll get to it, but on the injury front, we've got a little bit going on there. But even selection going into the Carlton game, we played Tucker as a first gamer and Gray. We left out Ibbotson and Subban, but it would have been, like, De Boer and Mazunga have been rock solid in the seconds, but we're making choices to expose our list and go forward. So, and then in the course of the run, we're with Fife, Johnson and Ballantyne, significant problems on the day, just compounded the problems. But regardless of that, we had enough ball, we competed well enough, and our method was really poor that we weren't able to win. But all credit to Carlton, I think both teams are walking away thinking, I don't think there was elite performances of the competition.
No, it was a great effort from you guys, Ross, and you're spot on with the outside run and the ball use. Nathan Fyfe, how is he today?
Yeah, no, he's not great. So we're about to release a press statement that he has a fracture in his leg. He's flying to Melbourne. He'll be operated on. We're not really... He's pretty... All our players are special to us and the care is important, but there'll be no return to play date put out. It will just be what's best for Nathan when he's 100%. So we'll get to that later. But, yeah, he's flying over for that to occur. So we're really disappointed with that and for him. And Michael Johnson will be releasing as well. He's got a significant hamstring tendon tear and a medial ligament as well. Sure. So we have a bit of collateral damage there, but that you're right, so those sort of things just continue to expose your list, but we're certainly up for the challenge
back and with Sandilands as well. So have you got a time frame on Fyfe, Ross?
No, as I said, I'll just sort of repeat that. There's no time frame. It's, okay. We're not even interested in his return to play at the minute. And if it took a year to get him healthy, that's what we would do. There'll be no risk. But we'll let the surgeons, you know, it's all... we know the fractures there. He's flying over. So we'll leave it in the hand of the experts, and then we'll update the marketplace and our members as necessary and as fitting.
Ross, when you factor in those clearly now long-term injuries, those indefinite return type of injuries, does that, look, I ask this, use this phrase, but it may be not the right one, force your hand on what you need to do with this football club now, with you in the first, effectively, of what is a fresh five-year deal?
Yeah, well, I'm 1 year into five, so it was the extension. I got four after this one. So I don't think it forces my hand. Like, we're full-time at what we do, so we've had continuous meetings with Brad Lloyd and our board and our list management committee and Chris Bond and Steve Rossich and Steve Harris. So we understand exactly where we're at. Clearly, we didn't think we would be 0-5 with personnel we had and what we're planning. But with injuries and reality of performance, it brings discussions forward and an urgency of assessment. There's no doubt about that.
Right. Do you use the term rebuild, Ross?
Well, I said, you know, we're restumping, replumbing, rewiring. At the end of the day, guys, everyone, I'm not here to write your headlines. Everyone can make their own assessment. So you just do it through custom and practice. You do it through method. Everyone can make their own calls. But we always have the period ahead, which is the next game and the next session and the next review, and we're always looking longer. So,
yeah.
But we're already making choices, as we did last year, Paul Duffield versus Tommy Sheridan. That... people don't really pick up on that. But
he's been good behind the ball, Ross,
call,
hasn't he?
Hey?
He's been pretty good behind the ball, Tommy.
I can't hear you. Hey?
You there? Hello. Can you hear me?
Have you got us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yeah, so we were picking Tommy Sheridan over Paul Duffield last year. It was a 50-50, and Tommy Sheridan's coming through. So you're always making those sort of calls as you go, as much as you don't always, you know, put the fireworks up with them. Hopefully people just see that you're doing that.
Ross, is your board, is your supporter base and just the general sports fan in Perth ready for this club to, as you say, restump and go back? Given what you've always been as a coach, to play for the absolute now, and that's obviously a credit to you, but you're now in a different situation. Are they ready for what lies ahead?
I know you'd have to ask them. I think anything you do in a footy club, Rod Butters gave me some great advice. Ross, if you don't equip me and upskill me with the information and feed up and manage up, if I'm asked a question and I reach for the information's not there, I'll make it up. So therefore, communication of football clubs works both ways, and that dialogue's continuing. But It's not always for me to be ringing Steve Harris. That's not the way it works. James will know that. There's CEOs, there's football operations managers, and we work in concert, and we have these discussions at the right time, and they're not ad hoc. And I'd be remiss if they weren't ongoing. So... but yeah, our draft from my first year, they're all playing. Sheridan, Sutcliffe, Neil, Crozier all played on the weekend. They've all got... Sheridan's 42 games, Sutcliffe and Neil in my first year, they're 72, 73 games.
Ross, when you talk
we
about...
just didn't tap them on the head. So Tabernale, for rookie list from 3 years ago, a young tall, played 30 in two final series. Alex Pearce, third-year player, has played 20 games and he's been injured. So... we're always been doing it.
Yeah.
So everyone else's perception doesn't really interest me. I work hard for my club.
Yep.
The club, the board, the list, managers, they set the strategy and direction, and I'm a part of that, and then we all commit and we do. We're clearly, I think, we wanted to get going over the last couple of weeks, but we haven't been able to do that. We've incurred significant injury. I think there's three clubs. I'm only worried about us, but when you look around at the Pies today, and you look around at Richmond, there's clubs not where they want to be. So I think all of us are assessing as we go on a weekly basis and adjusting the strategy and the plan, and we're no different.
Was there any part of your or other people at your footy club's thought processes that had you falling to this level when you sat and reflected upon a top-of-the-table finish after a home-and-away season last year and very nearly... reaching a grand final. Was this part of what you thought could happen amongst the five-year deals you've re-signed?
Well, I think it can always happen. Every year I've coached...
it's
never
quite drastic, though, Ross, isn't it? It is drastic to not win a game of footy.
No one's denying.
Coming off a prelim final.
Yeah, I know, but it can happen. You don't have to do much wrong and miss opportunities and get your method wrong against quality, and you blink and you're in trouble, and that's clearly what's happened. But it's happened before, it'll happen again. Fortunately, it's never happened to me before, but it's a new experience. And look, I'm not invigorated by it, but I've certainly said it's a formidable challenge. And, you know, when I signed the extension for 4 years, I knew there was transition going. So I'm clearly up for it. And, you know, as we move into that transition, I mean, there's different expectations. I've clearly always coached teams and clubs with massive expectations. Been to 3 grand finals, a replay. This club's won the second amount of most of the games behind Hawthorn over 4 years. Top 4 finishes, prelims and a grand final. So I don't think we've underachieved with what we've had. I think we've tried to create opportunity. We've done that. And I didn't think it was just going to roll on like that forever. I'm looking forward to the challenge of building and transitioning and coming out the other side. I think I look around and see people that have done it and tried to do it and not achieved it. I'd like to have a crack at it. I think I've got all the capabilities to get it done.
Just before we let you go, Ross, just clarifying, why is Fife coming to Melbourne? Is he surgeon over here, is he?
Yeah, Julian Fowler did his last one.
Right.
He does lots of our guys, so he'll fly in and hopefully everyone will respect his privacy and we'll continue to give the updates and as time permits and what's fitting. So, yeah, it's really, we're upset for Nathan and we're upset for our club and our fans, but I'm sure we'll get him right at the right time and he'll be back bigger and better than ever.
Hey, Ross, we appreciate it, mate. Thanks very much for jumping on.
No worries.
And good luck with everything coming up.
Thanks, James.
Fascinating interview with Ross Lyon for
me,
Brian.
Twitter has gone absolutely berserk on the Nate Fyfe stuff, so hearing it first here on Triple M Football, Nate Fyfe out indefinitely, fracture of the leg coming over here. Our leading surgeon over here, Julian Fowler, one of them, is going to be seeing him this week, and he's gone.
We might get Doc White to talk about Michael Johnson. I know he's not as big a name, obviously, but they've already lost McFarlane. He's retired, and you lose your best defender in Johnson. He sounded like a tendon tear. That could be 8 to 10.
And their previous best forward is probably not quite up to it in Pavlich.
Not quite or isn't?
Well, he's finished, isn't he?
Yeah, well...
he's probably played on a season too long.
And look, Ross won't talk about Pavlich, and nor should he, but you look at the way he's playing, and Ross has just about conceded this year, and to me, talking about the longer term already, which sends the
message.
They're
not scoring, Spud. They're averaging 73 points a season, which is 10 points down on what they averaged the year before. And if you look at the top 8 teams this year and you look at how footy's changed in terms of scoring, the top 8 teams, the ones you've got to beat, are averaging 108 points as against 73 at Freo.
And what you do is you look at a guy like Pavlich. Does he play out the year and nurture the young guys? Or does he simply put the cue in the rack?
You've coached the footy club. Well, if you're Ross Lyon, do you have to have that conversation with Matthew Pavlich as soon as this week?
Well, I think he talked about the list management, and I think that was quite interesting. And I think in the top of the match committee board, you would have all the talent there, but then you'd have youth and age.
Spud, does he have to have the conversation with
Matthew
Pavlich this week?
No, I think he does.
And say, that's it? Or you give him a farewell game?
No, I'd give him the option just to have a think about where he wants to, where and when does he want to do it.
Do you see it that way too, JB?
No, I don't. Especially with Mundy, Johnson, Sandilands, Fife, Ballantyne all out, and a lot of them out for a long time. I don't think you can get rid of him in that context. But what interests me, Purple, is they've got Adelaide in Adelaide, GWS, Hawthorn. They're their next 3 weeks.
Yep.
If those games don't go to plan, and they might, because it's an inexact science predicting who's going to win games of footy, we know that. But let's say they don't. This is what Ross Lyon, I reckon, will then do with his head of footy and with Steve Rosic and Steve Harris. He'll sit down and go, right, we've got two choices here. Is there any point boxing our way to ninth from here?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any point doing that? Or should we have a look at all these kids that we've got on the list and see if any of them can play, get ourselves to a position in the draft where we can have a real lash at it, you know? Maybe by trading and getting another first-round pick, or a free agent jumps out and you get compensated for it or whatever. Because history will show you that boxing your way to 8th, 9th, 10th doesn't sit you in good stead at all, especially Purple with, and I can't stand them, but with these compensation picks, because if you finish 10th, you end up with pick 15.
Yeah. Mm.
And that's no bloody good to you at all compared to pick three or four. So that's they're the decisions that I reckon in the next month they'll be faced with.
Well, they're the decisions that need to be made by a board as much as a coaching
Absolutely.
Structure. So
100%.
Are you suggesting that the Rossich and Harris crew need to sit with Ross pretty soon
and
actually say, let's don't win more than five, six games? Because that's a dangerous conversation to have,
Yeah,
isn't
I don't
it?
Know whether it's a don't win conversation, Purple. I reckon it's more a right, what are we doing here?
We're going to play these kids.
Yeah, we're now one and whatever. Mm. How are we taking the rest of this season forward? You know, that's... And they're a very strong, well-resourced club. You know, that it just interested me listening to Ross use that transition word about four times in that discussion.
Yeah, it was.
I'm sure I'll be asking Brad Lloyd what his list management strategy looks like. And they would have it all in place, Brian. That's what they do. They look at the now, but look at the future. Where's their next premiership team? So Brad Lloyd has got a big part to play.
All right, so that's Freo, but what about Carlton? As I say, I didn't see any footy last night because I was at a 50th, but what a great thing for them to win it. First game interstate against a club like Freo in Perth. For Brendan Bolton and their club, that must be brilliant.
They deserve to win. It's as simple as that. They really deserve to win. Both teams are hard at it, but you can see Brendan Bolton, the look on his face after the game was, we've won away, and they would look at that fixture at the start of the year saying, we are no chance. They won the first nine games last year, Freo. We're playing them over there. We're not expected to win a game. That is worth four or five wins, Brian,
what
for
they
the
do?
Young team.
For people that didn't see it, Spud, that are listening now, how would you put it into a paragraph?
All their better players perform, Brian. Right. You think of Cripps, you think of Murphy you think of
great,
Gibbs, you think of Simpson, Thomas. They were their best five players, and they are their best five players when you look at their list. So they were absolutely outstanding in the clinches and in the game on the outside. Mark Murphy was terrific. Obviously, a little bit of doubt going into the game. Wore a helmet. That's what your captain has to do. He put his head, the first contest he went for, he didn't worry about it whatsoever. And I think the young group, they lifted around that to the fact that their skipper, probably not 100%, but he's got a helmet on because you're not 100%. It's as simple as that. And he just went whack, got in there. And, of course, Cripps, we've spoken, I know you love him, JB. Yeah. He is I don't like to say star because he's only just starting, but
he's on the way.
He's a young star.
No, you can say that.
Well, he's 6'4". He wins the ball. He can go forward.
Performing in front of his home, you know, exactly. His family and that yesterday.
Oh, look, and when the game was up for grabs, again, he was behind the ball. He'd set up structures, and his leadership for a young guy is outstanding.
He got some of those ugly touches early, Spud, didn't he? Ugly touches where they weren't pretty, but he just moved the ball forward, particularly around the stoppages.
They're game style, and you don't like to compare it to Hawthorn, but you can see a little bit in it. There's no doubting that. The way they just don't panic with the ball all the time. Sometimes I'll just slow it down, and, you know, they were just great. And to see Liam Jones kick the winning goal, like, he's been much criticised. That was great for him as well. Their tackling pressure was great.
And the next 3 weeks, Essendon, Collingwood, Port, you know, I know they've only won the one game for the year, but they wouldn't go into those games thinking they can't win them. That's for sure.
And they got touched up by Sydney, Gold Coast and the Western Bulldogs. Well, there's no problem there. They're three very good sides, and when they hit the Gold Coast, they were in good form. They were undefeated at that stage. They got them up at Metricon. Sydney are going to bash a lot of sides up this year, as are the Western Bulldogs. Mm. So, but, round one, we saw them here, Purple,
against
Richmond. They were much better. You could tell just visually they were setting up behind the footy better. Yep. So, you know, for Blues fans, they'll have watched last night and feel great.
Well, you can build a team around Wiedering, Cripps, and you've got a really good, strong, solid midfield who are ageing a little bit, but there'll be one man that's a little bit of a spring in his step today, that's Sausage, Steve Silvani. The list manager's did a very good job with GWS. You've only got to see the way they're performing now. He's got a blueprint there. They're not in a hurry. They're just going to keep nurturing these youngsters and get the best young picks available. So they're on a real positive slant. Their membership's going well.
Yep.
So well done to Carlton at the moment.
Yep. He did do a good job at GWS, but mind you, I reckon Mrs. B, with a blindfold on,
30.
Sort of...
They have got 30 first-round draft picks on their list at the moment.
I saw GWS yesterday. They were slick. And you know what?
They're going
to
be good.
You don't go to the footy expecting to see them hard. They were hard, as you would say, as a cat's head. And Toby Green and guys like this, they were really hard, really slick, and unbelievably quick and clean. I was surprised at how good they were. Really surprised.
Bristol, there was a famous old captain of South Australian cricket who played for Australia called Les Favell. When rubbish bowling used to come on, he'd say, boys, make sure you get in for your chop. Clubs who are somewhere near the front at the moment, get in for your chop, because within a minute, Bristol, this mob will dominate the competition and no one will get a look in. I'm telling you, the quality on that list, Spud, is they drop blokes and bring in a number five pick.
Overall.
North have had one of them in the last 15 years.
You look at a kid like Josh Kelly, who I absolutely love watching play, and he's coming on and off the ground. He would be first pick midfielder for the bottom seven or eight teams.
Yeah, he would.
He's an absolute star, but he just at the moment can't get an opportunity because Callum Ward, he's very, very underrated.
Yeah.
He's missed out on All-Australian by three or four on tight occasions. His form and his leadership is terrific, Brian. As I said, the hardness, but now they've got the run and carry. Gee, they're good to watch.
All right, Jack Revolt's going to join us next for Tigers fans. What's happening there? Always a fascinating man to speak to, Jack Revolt.
Interesting, JB, that he's just jumped off the plane wearing a puffer jacket. A puffer jacket on. It's 40 degrees here.
Well, no, I've had it because I thought it might chill down a little later on.
And it's obviously a birthday present, the T-shirt as well, Brian.
A lot of tweets coming through because we sent out a photo saying that you're wearing your son's T-shirt as well. And
birthday present.
A little footballs on.
Pull that stuff off, Bristol. This is what happens. See, you blokes are giving up, especially you, Spud. What the hell have you got on there?
What is it, Jim?
What is that?
No, what are you wearing?
It's an Oldham soccer club in England.
Come on,
one of the oldest soccer clubs in the world.
Jack Rewalt from the Richmond Footy Club, beaten by the Demons last night. Jack, welcome to you. And before we get this one underway, mate, I'm going to put my hand high in the air and say I was at a 50th in Adelaide last night, so I did not see a second of this game, so I'm going to leave it to the boys to do the questioning. But welcome and thanks for joining us.
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me.
Look, must have been disappointing, obviously, the loss, but it just looked like Melbourne coming out of the blocks. You fought your way back into the game, but they just had enough in reserve all game, really. You just couldn't peg that 15-20-point lead back.
Yeah, Spud, you're probably right, mate. They obviously jumped us early and put a few goals on the scoreboard and got that margin that sort of stuck around for most of the game. We'd work back to nearly back to square, and then they were able to put another couple on us. So, unfortunately, we couldn't bridge the gap, and then, they just managed to kick goals at times where we were getting a bit of a run on.
It just looked like the game on the outside when it broke open. It looked like Melbourne obviously changed their style, but they just had a little bit too much run for you guys.
Yeah, they probably did. They had 90 more touches than us, so they've obviously had a lot more ball than us, and they beat us in contested ball and tackle. So when those things, those three factors in a game don't go your way, you're not going to win many games of AFL footy. And credit to the D's, they played pretty good brand of footy last night, and their players played well.
How's the team morale at the moment, Jack?
I wouldn't say it was great, Brian. We're 1-4, so realistically, any side that's 1-4 isn't going to be feeling that great about themselves and the way they're going. But it's AFL footy, and we've been in this position, unfortunately. We've been in it before, and we fought out of it, and it doesn't take the heroics of one person or two people. It takes 22 or a list of 44 pulling in the same direction. So the sooner we can get most of the guys or all the guys pulling in the right direction, the quicker we're going to turn it around.
So do you feel like that in the games you've played so far, there have been parts where, you know, it's given you confidence that there is some sort of foundation there?
Yeah, look, we played some passages of good footy last night. Spud sort of spoke about it before, that we were down early, and then we were able to fight back in, and then Melbourne would obviously key a couple of goals. So we're putting patches of games together, but patches of games doesn't win you games of AFL footy. It's four quarter efforts, and unfortunately at the moment I don't think we've been able to put a four quarter effort together all season. So we've got to work on that. We've got some young guys on the side that have got to step up and help the leaders. So that's on us as leaders, making them better players, and the coaches and the football club to help develop these kids so they can start to get 22 guys pulling in the same direction on game day.
Jack, just hearing you talk here, like 22 guys pulling in the one direction and also playing only in patches of footy. You've alluded to this already in this brief conversation that you've been here before, haven't you? Can you pinpoint why though? Five rounds into 2016, that here you are again.
Well, Damien, if I could pinpoint it, then we wouldn't be in this position because we'd be able to fix it pretty quick smart. So at the moment, it's just a, I suppose it's just an accumulation of errors. I reeled a few stats off them before. When you're not winning the ball with the coal face and you're leaving it up to your captain to have 20 contested possessions and then unfortunately there's not anyone week in, week out that's continuing to support him, it makes it tough. And obviously they dominated us around centre bounce last night. We're able to score heavily from that. And we just need a few more guys to step up. At the moment, we're probably leaving it to too few to carry the load.
Yourself and Alex Rance and Cochin are regularly being named amongst the best players for obvious reasons. You are amongst the best players. You've touched on this. Some younger players need to step up and join you. I know you were taking no satisfaction out of your own relatively good form this year, but are you confident with 17 rounds remaining that those young players to which you refer are capable of actually doing what you want them to do?
Yeah, I am, 100%, definitely. I've seen it in these kids before. They're obviously guys that have played very little games, and it's really important to find your feet at AFL level. We've just got to find a way to speed the process up so they find their feet quicker and are able to help us impact in games and play solid four-quarter games of footy.
Do you fear you'll be without your fullback, Alex Rance, after what he did last night?
It's obviously one that'll be dealt with by the match review panel, so I can't really comment on it too much. But what I can say is that it's really important that our leaders continue to show the axe of TMAC. So we'll wait to see what happens with the match review panel with that one.
Are you saying you're disappointed with what happened there?
Oh, it's obviously a free kick and a 50-metre penalty. That's more the things that we're focusing on. It's turned from a shot that's in the pocket and probably a little bit of a tricky one to a set shot right down the front. So when we go out to represent the football club, we try and represent it to our best and play to the team values.
Jack, you talked about the leadership group, and look, Trent Cotchin's been under a lot of scrutiny. As Warrior alluded to, Rance, yourself and Cotchin have been outstanding. Does it take maybe you and Rancey to sit down with a few of these younger guys? Because you look at you play and Rance, and I know you talk about yourself, but your ratings out of 10, very rarely do they vary. They're 8 or 9 out of 10. Do you sit a few of these youngsters down and say, boys, we've just got to compete. We're just not competing in all facets of the game, and instead of leaving to the captain all the time?
Yeah, well, that's the process of being a leader and an older player around the football club, Spud. It's not only up to the coaches to try and, I suppose, speed up the development of our younger players. It comes down to your senior players that have been through the experiences of playing AFL footy and playing against good teams and good opponents. So, definitely at the moment we're really trying to help our younger guys out, teach them, but also be stronger than them as well to become better players.
Look, and I get that, and I reckon that's fantastic, but you as a leader, do you need an icebreaker for your club? Something different out of the box instead of looking in the review? Do you as a leadership group get all the group together? I'm not sure what you can do.
Are you going to go down there with your theories,
no,
and give them the old under the pump
story? No, I'm not, Brian. And we've got to be very careful. But sit around a campfire, and you're not allowed to do it, but and sit around and have a couple of quiet ones.
Reckon that'll work, Jack, sitting around the campfire?
I'm not much of a camper, boys, to be honest.
That's just an example, Jack, but just an icebreaker.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Spud, and I can promise you there's stuff going inside the club, and guys are racking their brains on how we can break the slump, for want of a better word, and we're trying things inside the football club, and we're trying to just get guys going. But ultimately, it comes down to when the game day comes around, bringing 100% effort 100% of the time, and we've just got to continue to drive our boys to do that, and then hopefully the wheel will turn for us, and we can get back to playing some good footy, which we know we can do.
We're feeling for you, Jack. It's a very intense time in footy, and particularly at Richmond, and a number of clubs right at the moment. I sensed a couple of questions back. Just Trent Cotchin this year, he had another really good game, you know, backing up from last week as well. Do you think that he's been unfairly treated through this whole process this year?
Brian, I could probably go into a few words of what I think about the way he's been treated with a few expletives, but unfortunately, mate, he's copping it at the moment, and he's copped it ridiculously unfairly from outside the football club and in the media, probably more than anything else. But unfortunately, with our football club, it seems that when someone writes an article about something, it seems a pretty easy article to keep rehashing, and it's what's happened. And I think if you look at the performances he's putting up on the field, I can't disagree anymore with the way he's been treated in the media. It's been it's probably been a bit of a witch hunt.
Why is that? Because he's a bloody good player. He's instrumental in what you do. He's trying to carry as much responsibility as he can. So why?
I'm probably not the bloke to ask for that one, Brian. Maybe ask Purple on why the media continue to go after him. I can only really think that he's the captain of a fairly large football club in Melbourne that unfortunately aren't going as well as what we want to go at the moment. But I mean, I don't know why.
Hey, Jack, as I said, I didn't see last night, but I've seen the previous four games. Not the individual thing for me I find as interesting, because I'm with you. I think, everyone's having a crack at this level, otherwise you wouldn't be there, so I don't doubt that. It's more for me the real risk-taking that I saw from Richmond last year in the back half of the year, that sizzling run from behind, that emphatic sort of overlap run and that sort of ball movement that just intimidated all clubs when you were playing last year, that seems to have evaporated to me a bit. It seems a lot more stagnant, and I'm asking you as a key forward whether you're noticing that, because last year at times it just looked so impressive.
Yeah, we're missing that, James, and that's a part of our game plan that we've got to continue to work to get back. At the moment, I think we've been defended really well from Oppo sides, and sides are putting a lot of time into us, so we've got to find a way around that to get back to that brand of footy that I know that I love playing and that we love playing as a group and people love watching as well. So we've got to find ways to get back to that form and get back to playing that brand of footy that's exciting, and it's offensively it's really good, but it certainly helps us defensively as well.
Well, dangerous too. You just look so dangerous. Anyway, I know you're addressing all of that in-house, and mate, we know it's a tough one for you to jump on the line and speak to us after last night, so we thank you very much for doing it.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
We just spoke to Jack Riewoldt, fascinating interview with him, but what we need to do, Purple, is just for the Melbourne fans, swing onto a club who I think for the first time, well, it's got to be in a decade, have genuine momentum.
Well, they do. I think they should aim high. They had their internal predictions, JB, about this time last year to re-emerge in a final scenario sense in 2017. I'm bringing that forward if I'm Paul Roos and Peter Jackson right now. I'm thinking sky's limit sort of stuff. Now, they may fall short, but now that they're 3-2, and on the back of the man that you discovered, Jim, I have to say it, and I hate to admit to it, you discovered Max Gawn
Big
before
Maxie Gawn.
Anyone did. He is the second best ruckman in the competition right now, with Sandilands out, Spud, behind Goldstein, and he's hitting it down to a guy who is as courageous as anyone has ever been in Jack Viney, who finished Spud, as you know, runner-up in the best and fairest last year, having missed six matches of football to a very worthy winner too in Bernie Vince.
Bernard.
But that combination is looming as key to what lies ahead for a long time.
You've rated him ahead of Nick Natanui and Mumford, Max Gawn.
I think you can put him in the conversation.
I would.
I think he's in the conversation.
No, he goes forward and takes marks. He's the scoreboard now.
Look, I'm not arguing with him. I'm just saying you said the second best, but I
think he's in the conversation,
Spud. Yeah, he's in the conversation.
What I like about him, I don't know whether you heard it, BT, but he wants to be in that conversation himself. I love the way he's carrying himself publicly. He's out there and he's absorbing the expectation around not just the club but himself. And he bought into that conversation last week that I want to be talked about as this person.
Well,
I love it.
Yeah, and Viney, as you said, the Ruck Rover combination, I'll grant you that, they are the best combination in the competition. Oh, the stats say that. Champion data hits to advantage to Viney.
Yeah.
Viney last night, and look, it's been talked about for a long time. He's always going to be better than his old man. You hear that a lot with sons of guns. He's 37 disposals. He had 24 contested ball. Now, that is Chris Judd-like.
Yeah.
And look, his ball use is getting better, but it doesn't have to be that good when you're winning so much in the clinches, because he just gets it out. And
there's a presence though, Spud, too, that you can't put a stat on, isn't there?
He's so good.
He wants to win, and you saw him last night. Just he took it upon himself, didn't he, BT, at times, to just take over the moment and just off the ball. Even he's doing things that annoy opposition, but you know that are revered by people he plays with.
Alex Rance reported for striking the elbow to Jack Watts. I think he'll get a week for that. Rance,
he has to.
I think he will, and I think you see Jack Viney after that, straight into him. Straight into Rance, and that is what you want from a leader. And Rancey, you know, he didn't take a backward step either, but Viney's saying, okay, game on now. And as I said, the scoreboard's the winner. Paul Ruse and Simon Goodwin have done a great job, BT. I think Bernard Vince off the half-back line. Just the ball use from those and Salem. Tom McDonald, they've got a great spine. You know, Hogan didn't have a huge game, but he just adds bits and pieces, and Jack Watts was good again. Their style is exciting, and to hit the scoreboard, 20 goals, 9 BT, pretty good kicking, and they are good to watch. That's what I like about Melbourne. They are great, exciting to watch.
Let's get real about them. They're competing with the sides in the bottom half of the ladder, and that is what you'd want them to do.
Yep.
And at this stage, we have seen no significant improvement against sides in the top eight.
Well, GWS.
Well, GWS.
Or top eight
round
sides.
One. GWS is GWS, a good win. But,
you know.
No, look, I'm with
young
you.
Side
I,
up
I don't think they can make the finals, Warrior. I know where you're coming from. Yeah. But I just think if they win 9 to 10 games, that is a great result. Yeah. And they've got some really good youngsters.
Well, they've got set,
great defender.
As bad as last year was for the period around about 60% to 85% of the way through the season, they still got to 7 wins when it was all said and done, Spuddy. You'd think that they wouldn't have that bad as stretch of footy as they had last year. So I reckon the 9-10 is very realistic. And as you know, if you're getting to 10, it's not beyond the stretch to get to 12, and then you're in that conversation.
You can have a bit of luck at the end and get a run going together. So, yeah, you're right.
But what they're doing is better. That's the thing that we're rejoicing in, is that, you know, what they're doing on the field now, Melbourne, is much better. And you only have to see them play live, which we have, to see how much better organised they are. And they're not getting opened up. You know, they used to get scored against horribly, and that's not happening. So, certainly things are starting to look good for them.
And they look forward. When they get the ball now, especially down the back half, BT, they go forward. You know, in the past, they were saving games and trying to defend the scoreboard.
They were crappy.
They're not afraid. Yeah, they were. They were actually boring to watch. They're not afraid to lose now. What I mean by that is that they are taking the game on. Let's get the ball in there and just see what happens. And as I said, they're reliant on Jones, weren't they? Nathan Jones, best player again. Gee, Nathan Jones. Well, Jones is leading well, but he's third or fourth cab on the rank now.
I think you're selling a bit too short too, BT, for what it's worth, given that you just said they're only beating teams that are in the bottom half. The game against North Melbourne, which is one of their two losses, was their best performance for the year, and they were very unlucky to not have that game go their way.
Yeah, they lost it.
Well, the other thing, Bristol, is they've got Petraka coming in, if not next week, the week after.
I'm excited about seeing him.
Very excited. Yeah. And young Angus, my nephew, has been bashed up a bit, so he's playing forward. But when he gets his body right, he'll go in as well. Dom Tyson's playing very good football for him. Viney, you rightly say, is a jet. Nath Jones has always been an unbelievably good player. Max Gawn. So that's a midfield group for me, Spud, that is starting to look really imposing. The young players who... Clayton Oliver.
Yeah, Oliver's
going to be a ripper. He got rested, but he'll come back in and play really well.
Melbourne supporters would be nervous because they've had these good groups before, and they've stuffed it up.
Not this good, BT. This is real.
They've got a good group here. If they stuff this up, get rid of a lot of them.
I'll tell you,
the players, the people managing the players.
Yeah, I think they've got a whole lot.
They've done that. They've got
a guy that maybe just ahead of himself a little bit. I just watched the wobble. And Thomas Bugg's a very hard player, but when he sort of got the ball over the top, the old...
He did the Babe Ruth.
The Jay Goose over the top as Dennis
Pogue.
What was the
point to the bloody stand?
He's
about
pointing to the scoreboard, JB, in front of the Tiger Army.
Lord, who does that?
Then kicked the goal and went...
Oh, come on, Tommy.
So I just thought maybe...
Come on, Tommy, tidy it up.
I thought, if Richmond are going to win this, there's going to be 22 Tiger jumpers giving it to him, but they won, and good luck to you, Tommy.
Seb, well, let's get over to Gallipoli, because Seb Costello's done an amazing job over there for the Nine Network and, of course, for Triple M, and well, that must be a fantastic thing to be involved in Anzac Day at Anzac Cove. Seb, are you with us?
G'day, JB. Yeah, the dawn service has just finished. It's sunrise here at Anzac Cove, and just finishing what was a pretty moving service. Official crowd numbers put at 1,200, which is down on last year, but that was a centenary, so they're always going to expect that. And no security incidents either here on the Gallipoli Peninsula, which Which is good to hear, because it was a massive operation. You know, the full pat-down hand all over your backside sort of stuff to see what you were carrying in. And we're all happy and we're all good.
Hey, mate, it's a bucket list thing for so many Australians. It's certainly on mine to do one day. Tell us what it's like as the sun rises over that famous place.
Yeah, I mean, the sense of space is tremendous. You know, it's such a significant place in our history. You grow up, you hear about the Anzacs landing on the beach. And let me tell you, when they say beach, you know, it's not kind of the golden sands of Queensland. It's, you know, a very rocky, short coastline. So
how big is it?
Been out of the boat and right into it. And you look up at the cliffs just off the water. You know, it's sandy, unsteady sort of surface. And to be climbing that into Turkish fire, you know, it's hard to imagine. And I guess that's why the legend of commitment, of duty, of mateship lives on 101 years later since they arrived here at Anzac Cove.
Give us a feel of the size of the area you talk about there, the beach, and compare it to some sort of area in Australia where you think it's similar.
Yeah, look, as I say, Beach, it's a pretty short beach line, you know, pretty rocky. You know, the peninsula itself, though, is beautiful. And that's one thing you don't really get taught when you hear about the Anzac story. You know, there's such a tragic past to this area, but it's gorgeous. You know, the blue water of the Aegean is almost unlike anything we've got back in Australia. You know, the sun comes up, it glints off it, it's a beautiful blue, and then the green ridges with the scrub and the undergrowth off that. So, you know, you find yourself trying to reconcile those sort of areas. The beach itself would be, about a kilometre or two where the landing was. Of course, they ended up a bit further north of where they wanted to be on that morning on April 25th, 1915.
Hey, Seb, thanks very much for painting a great picture, mate. I'm sure you're really enjoying what is a very moving and enriching experience.
Thank you very much, guys. And, it certainly has been a pretty special morning here. And go Bombers.
Tell you what, Duck, you said it earlier, you can't have dragged a better day.
No, good. Well, the whole weekend, has had beautiful weather, but this is absolutely perfect. There's not a breath of wind.
Yep.
It is just ideal for footy, and these players, I mean, what a day to play footy. What a monopoly they've got on this great day, and it's a privilege, and I think this is going to go down to the wire. I honestly do. I'm not bullish about the Magpies at all. In actual fact, if I was to say, and this is how I've tipped this year, although I probably got last night wrong because I went against it thinking Richmond would respond.
Yep.
But if you were to tip on who's playing the best team footy out of these two sides, you would say Essendon are playing better team footy.
What about if you line them up against each other?
Well, then you say Collingwood.
Yes.
But if you go off who's playing better team football right now, you would say Essendon. And that has stood pretty firm for who's won and lost over the weekend as well, BT.
Well, they're both 1-3. I don't know if they're playing better football.
They are playing better team football.
Well, that's what you reckon, but I don't agree just because you're the king of that. You know, I'm going to agree with you.
Well, okay, so Collingwood...
Look at Bristol's got himself into a standing position to utter this.
Jim, he didn't even agree with himself in a quiz answer.
No, he didn't. That's true.
Who's been more consistent out of these two sides?
What, this year?
This year.
We're both 1-3.
Yeah, but BT, you look at the whole game. Essendon were competitive against Geelong. Essendon have been competitive against every team
Collingwood
that they've played, except for Port Adelaide for one quarter.
Brian's in and out of the box a bit at the moment too, so I get the feeling there's something going on. I'm not sure what it is, but I'll tell you what else in the Twitter feed that's the Wolfpack.
Your shirt.
The shirt's gone nuts, and it's so it should because it's dominating. But no. The thing about this is lots of inquiries about the famous BT call of David Zaharakis' Anzac Day 2009 winning goal.
And then we got it. He's found the target.
Zaharakis.
An opportunity for Zaharakis. Zaharakis has kicked it. Zaharakis has kicked the goal. Essendon hit the front.
Jesus.
Essendon in front. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it, Brian.
What is going on?
Zaharakis has put the Bombers in front.
I'll tell you.
You're a grown man, but
you know what I've just noticed? You know how most people hate hearing their own voice on radio? Yeah, BT's standing there with the biggest smile on his face. He's like a Cheshire cat listening to himself.
There was a little bit of, that wasn't bad.
And what I love is Zarko, who was on the footy show last week, trying to tell us that he gets embarrassed by the mention of it. It's his ringtone. When people ring him, that's what comes up on his phone. Little Zarko absolutely loves it and uses it out in Diamond Creek, Brian. He's not going as well as he wants to be. He sometimes brings it up, and there it is for him, the little champ.
Don't think he needs any extra help, though, does he,
you're probably right, actually.
He's one man the Pies have to stop today. Yes. He has been great
fire. Yep.
A great legacy of an unbelievable day, Anzac Day, and this will be a sensational afternoon. And we owe so much of it to Kevin Sheedy, who was one of the visionaries that set this game up. I think we can cross now for Bob Jane Teammates, by the way, the tyre and wheel specialist, down to Mark Howard, who may have Sheeds with him. Howie?
Thanks, Jim. Firstly, it is an absolutely spectacular day, about 24 degrees at the moment. Kevin Sheedy is beside me. Kevin, this has been such a big part of your personal legacy this day. Sitting here now, knowing there's going to be 80, 90,000 people here in the sunshine, how does it make you feel? And always great to see you and great to speak to you.
Oh, look, I think it's you always feel good that you've done something that you left for the game. You know, I mean, playing it, you can play and you're lucky to be a coach. But, I mean, this will be here forever. You know, like, it's been 101 years of Anzac Day, and it was sitting there for 80 years before we went and got it. And to see everybody sort of enhance it and build it, both radio, television, and obviously news media. So when you see that happen, and that really encourages the fans, and of course it gives an opportunity for many of our great men and women who have been in Defence Forces to feel like they've been loved and cared for about. And I think that's absolutely crucial because, you know, they tend to be forgotten at one stage, and I think when that happened, we had to renew that and get it sorted out. And we did it.
You certainly have done it, and there was a big crowd in attendance today. There was discussions in the lead-up to this season, Kev, with all the problems that have beset your football club in recent times, whether they deserved to be playing on Anzac Day. How did you hit that? How did that hit you personally?
Well, look, I know it was Dennis Cometti, and that created a bit of a sort of a roll-on effect. I know I probably said the wrong thing. I said, well, look, if Dennis is leaving at the end of the year, he's announcing his retirement, maybe he should leave now. I was only being a bit flippant, but... so important that we actually keep that tradition there, I think. If you start toying with tradition a hell of a lot, and I don't mind, you know, two on the bench or one extra on the bench to have a look, or even a night grand final, that wouldn't worry me for 1 year to look at it. But these sort of, you very rarely anywhere in the world will be able to lock out a stadium of the magnitude of the MCG, and we can do that in this game often. Then we've got Dreamtime, and actually Country Farmers will be another one. So for the right reasons for our society and people in general, because, you know, we want our whole of Australia to love AFL. It's an Australian game, totally played in every state in the major league. And, of course, if we get that sorted out with some of these games, and we can share that around the country. But I'm prepared to help support other clubs when they think of an idea. But they haven't thought of any ideas, you know. I mean,
so talking about one of those other clubs, you're up against Collingwood today, and I think you'd get a kick out of the fact there's an American starting up forward for Collingwood who's played 24 games of football in his career. We're off to China with Port Adelaide. I think those things would give you a kick.
No, look, I would love Essendon to get involved in that China game. But, look, I think with the young American today, that's a fantastic credit for him to be able to achieve this. The moment he gets selected, I mean, it's like going over to play gridiron America, really, in many, many ways. It's sort of like a flick of the coin, isn't it, the other way over the Pacific. But when you look back and see the things that are happening in our game with some Asian boys playing, some African boys playing now, Americans, we're all at a Canadian premiership player after Jimmy Steins playing in grand final. So look, when you look back, what the landscape's changing. And I think it's important that we do change it, because we still only have 24 million people in this country. And we need to look at some different money coming into our game from other sources. And I think in the next 5 or 10 years, we need the AFL to have the courage. They've already shown that, by the way, with the two new clubs, and the Gold Coast Suns and the Giants, in economic downturn time, global financial crisis time. They've shown an enormous amount of courage then. But these teams seem to be settling into the AFL now, so we need to just cast our little vision offshore and try and pick the spots and the moments and the time. We do that correctly, maybe round one off before the season starts, and then come back and have a rest. So I think there might be a chance there somewhere.
And just before we let you go, you've been generous with your time, and it's a busy day for you. James was talking about earlier on that he thought if you wanted to win a premiership, you needed to do it in the next couple of years, maybe the next year, because of the way the Giants are performing. Do you see this club that you were involved with from the start becoming a successful club, a very successful club, neither, or an absolute juggernaut?
No, I think that I think what David Matthews and Graham Allen, myself, we all went up there with Tony Shepherd and Richard Griffiths there now involved in this Canberra reconstruction of the Marniga. I was only there during this week, and we need to keep working on the Giants. But they're going to be, I think that could be a juggernaut. I mean, you know, they've still got deals across the table sitting there waiting on trades for possibly McCarthy going to Fremantle. And they've still got the first draft choice of Collingwood coming through for a Treloar this season. So they could end up with, you know, three of the top 10 draft picks again. So, you know, planned fairly well. I selected a team that they cleared. It's a quite a unique side of what they've cleared out of the club. And they probably learned a little bit from Hawthorn, where you needed to trade to get good players in. And I think the Hawks have done that really well with obviously Gibson and Hale and these sorts of boys, and McAvoy and so forth, and even McBurgland to three premierships after one at Port. You know, so that's been sensational trading with the Hawks. So in the end, I think that I think they're going to be an extremely talented team that's going to make fans pretty well excited. And look, if they've got a weakness, they've got to build a fan base in Melbourne.
Yep.
And we can sort that out, and I spoke to them about that. So good luck with that, but we need to get them up and involved high up in the ladder.
Kevin, from everyone listening, thanks for providing us with this chance to have a chat with you and putting this game on all those years ago. It's a wonderful treat to come here. It's a highlight of the calendar. We appreciate your team, and may your Bombers have a great day today.
Well, I didn't bring the sunshine. It just happens to come itself.
You brought everything else. That's Kevin Sheedy, guys.
Well done, Sheeds. And Howie, great job down there. We've got Doc Ryan White up here now. Joins us. Hello, Doc.
Hello, the Doc.
G'day, James.
Nice to have you in, of course. Hey. You'll do a great job down on the boundary today. But we need to discuss Nate Fyfe. Flown over here to see Julian Feller about a break in his leg. Well, is it a break in his leg? Tell us exactly how long you think he's going to be out and what he's dealing with.
So we look at it in the history that he had. He had that stress reaction in the leg, which suffered a fracture in that final, which he had plated by Dr. Julian Feller last year. Now, he would have had a plate that was about 6 or 8 holes in length to fix that fracture. Now, we're talking about the fibula bone that's only about a centimetre, 12 mil in diameter, and the little screws that go into it are about 3 millimetres. So there's always a risk that you can refracture, particularly at the ends of the plate where there's a little bit of weakness. So Julian will obviously assess him, and there is no doubt that he'll put a longer plate. Last year, he missed 8 weeks with his injury. The difficulty, well, I shouldn't say the difficulty, but some of the issues that Nat has to look at is his other injuries. In the last 18 months, he has been beaten up. He's had shoulder surgery. He's had a chronic back injury. Last year, he had that groin injury that was out for a couple of weeks. And, you know, this lingering leg injury has been now, well, it's the sequelae of last year's efforts. So I think Nat, this will be months for him to return, not only for the healing of the fracture that he's now sustained around that plate, but also the other injury, including his back disc issue.
Ross Lyon actually said to us an hour or so ago that he didn't care whether it took all year. Is that possible?
BT, I think that is extremely plausible. Again, given the nature of his play, and looking at the incident which he actually suffered, it was a tough tackle, but that's a sort of activity that Nat gets into several times a game. So, you know, he has got to be 110% before we see him back on the park.
Doc, you don't second guess the medicos at footy clubs, because that's just not the way you operate. But you did, on the night that Fyfe was revealed to have done the initial injury last year, have some real doubt about what impact he could have this year. Do you think that they may have, in their off-season work around him, possibly got him to come back too quickly?
Look, I don't think so, Damo. I think it was a tough time for Fremantle because finals were looming. He had this stress injury, and you know, maybe if it wasn't a final, he may not have played against Hawthorn when he actually suffered the fracture. Look, once the plate's in, once the healing has taken place, and again, we know that he had a downtime in December with
the back
disc injury that he had. So his leg had all the time it needed to heal, but we do know that there is a small incidence of refracturing around plates because there is an element of weakness at the bone at the end of the plate and also at the screw holes.
All right, Doc, thanks very much for that. Look forward to you dominating with Howie down on the boundary for Bob Jane Teammates, of course. A man who's here but not playing, sadly, for the Maggies, Jamie Elliott's been good enough to join us. Jamie, nice to have you in here, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you've got a stress fracture in your back. You're having to be very careful with it, and that's a good thing. How long until we see you back at 100%, do you reckon?
I haven't been asked at 100% before. Yep. Look, I'm looking at hopefully 6 to 8 weeks at best.
Okay, and tell us a bit about why you have to be so delicate with it.
Well, It's obviously my back, for one. And I suppose I've got to think about the rest of my life, because if I rush back, and this is with a pars defect, if you rush back, it's just going to be worse off in the long run. So I've just got to get it right. There's no point in trying to play with pain. So it's basically just trying to go day by day, manage the pain as best I can, and get load in at the same time.
Jamie, I believe you went to the Dawn service this morning for the first time with Nathan Buckley and a few of the first-year players. How did you find the service?
It's actually my second time. I went in my first year. I didn't play in that.
Thanks for that info, Luke.
So the two times I've been, it's a special feeling when you go there. I spoke about it before, but it just puts everything into perspective. You think about the opportunity that we have today just to even live, for what people sacrificed back in the day, the men and women, for what we have now. And we've got the privilege of, or the boys do today and whoever else plays, to run out on the ground and represent. It's just a major privilege and something you can't take for granted.
Jamie, what about the mood at the club at the moment? Obviously, there's a lot of external pressure and must be frustrating for you. You talk about the injury, but just standing back a little bit from the playing group yourself, you're obviously looking after your rehab. How's the general feeling? Is it just a win away? Is it a lack of confidence? What is it?
It's probably, I mean, the mood to answer that is, obviously we're a little bit flat, but that's initially after the game, and then we get straight into the next game and our preparation for that. So we don't like lingering on that, and I'm sure every team's the same. But in terms of confidence in that, I think it just comes down to the way we want to play and not executing it, because we haven't been able to do that. And we focused on that for the last probably 2 or 3 weeks of our weaknesses, also our strengths, and seeing what we are doing well, because it can't be all bad. But it's just putting into place what we have been lacking, and hopefully we do get the win today. But it's all about just sticking to the processes and not worry about the result, because it'll come.
The facts are you're down at the Brighton Barns at about 6 a.m. last Friday. Was that a penalty or just a part of recovery, or was just something to jilt the players' mindset to get them maybe breaking the ice looking outside the square?
Well, if you know Bucks, you know he likes getting players out of their comfort zone, and getting blokes up at that time to go for a swim is definitely out of their comfort zone. So it definitely wasn't a penalty. It was more leading into Anzac Day, getting us to do something that we aren't comfortable doing. And when he put into perspective that day that what the Anzacs fought for us to have today, all we're doing is waking up at 5:30 in the morning to go for a swim, so it's nothing big.
That's fair enough, but not going to win too many of the boys over by doing that, I wouldn't have thought, BT.
No.
I want to ask you about the small forwards. You're a small forward. Do you look at Friday night footy? Do you look at, last night? You see Poppy, you see Cyril, you see Eddie. They're all on absolute fire. Do you look at those guys, and is that your aim, to be one of the obviously very best small forwards in the game?
Oh, it'd be stupid not to want to aim for that.
Are you capable of reaching the heights that you see these guys produce?
Oh, absolutely. I think if I get a bit of continuity with my body, I think I've matured a lot since I first started playing. And that's not just footy-wise, it's probably my character as well. I definitely think I can get to that level. And Eddie Betts is probably one of my favourite players to watch. His work rate and how he plays is second to none. So when I do get back, I do think I can get to that level.
Have you been given a particular role, given the length of the time you're going to be out of the game, to fulfil on match days, or you just go down there and sherbet up and get stuck into it? How's it work for you?
Well, initially I tried to, because I knew what my scenario was, I tried to try and escape, not escape, but I suppose take footy out of my mind for a little bit, just to give myself a mental rest. And obviously, the last probably 3 weeks especially, I've tried to contribute a lot more in meetings. Whenever I have something that I want to share, I don't hesitate to speak up. And on game day, I don't want to get in bloke's face and be another coach as such. If I see something, I'll let them know. Especially with the forwards, I try and work closely with them. And at half time, I'll go down there, and if I see something that's not working, I'll speak to Stephen Grace and try and, I suppose, do my bit, because I'm obviously not out there and I can't play.
Jamie, the omission of Travis Cloak, obviously very impactful on him himself. What's it done for the playing group as well?
I don't think it's done anything to the playing group. I mean, Trav's been out of form. I'm sure everyone knows that. And it's just, I suppose we know how good of a player he can be, and I'm a really close friend of his, and it's hard for me to watch when he's not playing his best. But it's more about getting his confidence back, and the coaches and whoever else put him back into the VFL to do that. But at the end of the day, we want him to play his best footy. And whatever we can do to help him do that, whether it's his confidence or whatever we can do throughout the week to provide him the best opportunity, then we'll do it.
And what do you make of the man who's going to replace him today, Mason Cox? What can we expect when that ball's bounced?
Well, Mason Cox and Josh Smith are basically the same in the way they work behind the scenes. Josh Smith is a rookie who came in today and he hasn't put a foot wrong. He works so hard, knocks at the coach's doors every day, and Mason Cox, like who you just touched on, is an unbelievable player, and he's going to be a great prospect for us in the future. And he's so excited to get his opportunity today, but it was always going to come. He's going to get a little bit of exposure today, and hopefully, well, not hopefully, I think he's going to play his role. That's all we ask for him, whether he kicks goals or not. We just want him to crash packs, take marks, or bring it to ground.
What's his greatest strength? What's the thing that you can tell us that he will undoubtedly do out here today?
Mark a ball.
Right.
He's got massive mitts. Yep. But I think when you see him fully stretched, I don't think any defender can really go with him. So hopefully we see that today, and he goes and flies for his marks.
We spoke to Purdy last week, and he believed the reason why you were leaking goals, it only takes one person in the so-called chain to break down, and then you get sliced up through the middle. You sound like you're a thinker of the game. What is breaking down? Why are Collingwood leaking so many goals? Is it as simple as that? Is it the plan that Nathan Buckley is trying to implement at the club, or is it a player thing out on the ground?
No, it's definitely not the plan. We're just not playing how we want to play, basically. And
is it how you're setting up? Because clearly sides are slicing through the middle and getting out the back of your defence.
It's probably not playing how we want to play, like I said, because they're obviously getting out and around us, and we've focused on that last couple of weeks especially, because once they get out and around and they go length to length, it just hurts us, and we're chasing tail all day. And as a forward, you don't want to be doing that. So defensively, we've got to tighten up on that. And that's the main thing that we've been focusing on, is covering those switches and the priority areas.
Isn't it not far away? Collingwood will be out as well. They'll run through the banner together, which is another great part of what happens today. I want to ask you, Jamie Elliott, we're speaking to you, by the way, about there, a bit croaky, about the pig, Levi Greenwood, of course, over from North Melbourne, now playing at Collingwood, one of the great blokes. Pig, has he settled in beautifully at the Westpac Centre?
Yeah, he has. He's actually a really close mate of mine, and he probably took a day to actually fit in. So. Yep. No, he's a great bloke, great player. You can't question how hard he works, especially behind the scenes, and how he attacked pre-season. Obviously, there was pressure on him in the role that he was playing. And he's responded really well, and he's playing pretty decent footy. And that's all we ask is play his role, and whatever that is today, that's all we can ask.
Brilliant. Good luck with your own rehab. We don't like seeing stars of the game left out, so we hope you're back really quickly.
Thanks, JB. Cheers.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M. Rocks football.